Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.
Hello, you're welcome along to Tuesday evening's Off the Ball. We are back to 3 hours this evening. Football show is on the way after 9 o'clock. Has Pat Nevin. He's very excited that we're calling him again, just 3 weeks since we last spoke to him. First up, though, we will talk to Deirdre Duke and Nikki Daly, who are fresh from a World Cup final appearance on Sunday. Lots of GAA as well. James Horan and Dara Okeneji will talk about all the weekend's football. And then just after 8 o'clock, we'll have Dahi and Jamesy on the hurling. 53106 is the text number. We're on Twitter at Off the Ball. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent here in studio with us. Hello, sir.
Hi, Joe.
How you doing? And Richie McCormack here as usual.
Hey, Joe.
So the hockey coming up around 7:30 or so. It was a novel thing to have a World Cup final to look forward to, Dan.
Yeah, it was great.
These are exciting times. The football is back is a statement I said to you earlier. You got very angry with me.
It's not back, Joe. I never went anywhere.
I wanted to strangle it.
Strangle is the word.
Football never goes away.
February, March. Tom Barr's through to the 400-metre hurdles final, by the way. That's just happened. But yeah, it never went away, Joe. Started March.
So I hear.
It never stops. Like, football is a 12-month. Anywhere in the world, at any given point, the football is going on.
Yeah. No, you could have taken my meaning outside there, but you refused to. That was my point. You felt very strongly about this issue.
Oh, I did, yeah. It's sort of an insulting phrase.
When there's
football going on this week. Everywhere around the world, around Europe tonight, like huge Champions League games going on. Mm-hmm. Is football just the Premier League? Is that it? That all the football is?
Dundalk and Cork City's travails in Europe. That wasn't football, Joe.
It wasn't relevant.
It clearly was.
Yeah. Yeah. It just bugs me as a term.
No problem.
People that say football is back this week, I'm just like, nah.
And how are you feeling about the return of the Premier League 3-4 weeks after a World Cup?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be lying if I said I was madly enthusiastic. Mm-hmm. I think that will probably change once it starts. I mean, I guess it depends what everyone's investment in the Premier League is. Everyone has different reasons. Like, I don't have an English team, so I'm not there's not one particular team I'm madly sort of reading up on them, say, at this time of year, and wondering what's going to happen with them. There's a general interest, and there probably is that Irish hat on too, that you'd love if there was a raft of brilliant Irish stories to really be tuning into in the Premier League this year. And I don't know, that's not necessarily the case, there's not necessarily that thing that grabs you. But of course, when you have heavyweight clashes coming up in the coming weekends and you get to see great sides and great players, it'll grab you. But maybe just coming off the back of the World Cup, which was so good and probably untainted by some of the language that is just around club football, just the Mourinho sort of is an energy, it's just energy sapping, even trying to follow his travails leading up to the season. And it's all about the managers. A lot of Premier League is all about the managers and what's going on, whereas maybe the World Cup was more about the players and the sport. And I think that's maybe partly why I'm just a bit cold really at this stage.
I heard Miguel Delaney make the point earlier that in 2002 there was a 2-month gap between the start of the following season and the World Cup finals. So we've suddenly swung in 3-4 weeks potentially. Players are literally, the World Cup final and semi-final players are literally just coming back to training today or yesterday and trying to somehow prepare for the weekend. So it's all been a bit rushed. I think the other thing which has probably struck me, ahead of the World Cup, there were various think pieces or articles written saying, international football is in big trouble and the World Cup may never be as big again because they're going to 48 teams and various points like that. But actually, when you watch the World Cup and you realise, one of the reasons I think we all get so into it is because the players are so clearly into it. It is devastation for them if in their peak year at 27, 28, 29 and they have a chance of winning the World Cup, they don't, and they know their chance is gone. And you can easily become a bit more invested in that then. What we have at the moment, unfortunately, it seems, which is, it is literally Gazprom versus Abu Dhabi versus the Glazers. And the players are literally glancing down at their guitar to see what town they're in now. There is an element to club football now, which is just very hard to care about.
Well, it depends. You see, what do people want from their engagement with sport? I mean, if you want to watch the best play the best, then of course you're going to love the Champions League, the upper end of the Champions League, and you're going to enjoy the upper end of the Premier League. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, I think meaning, and without sort of using these terms, but I listened to Daniel Harris was on Off the Ball AM this morning, and he sort of went through the ownership structures of the top six in the Premier League,
right,
and the sort of unsavoury aspects to them all, mm-hmm. and how football has gradually moved away from I don't know where it started to a point now where, I mean, the owners are just interested in the TV revenue, the deals, and I mean, I'm joking about the whole football is back thing, right? But I mean, that is the, this is the monster that has been created now. And the World Cup is, although World Cup, I mean, the hosting and everything, I mean, sure. The World Cup is not clean, is anything but clean. But what it means to the players is something, I think, very different to what the club, and it almost reveals like the character of these great players who are, you know, it takes them out of their comfort zone and puts them into a scenario that they can't buy themselves out of trouble. You know, they can't buy themselves out of the situation that they're in. And I think that's something that will endure and that will survive, no matter what happens. Because what we've seen is, for example, in the Premier League this year, the Big Six have taken, I think they're taking more of a control of overseas TV revenue. That's certainly something that's gradually changing, and that, you know, club football is in danger of just becoming about like 15 to 20 clubs.
Sure.
And that's not what it should be, and that's not what it ever should be. It's not what made it so popular in the first place. Just that upper end of the Premier League, I mean, we'll be hypocritical about it. You can complain about it, and then Man City will play Chelsea and we'll sit down and get into it, you know. But when you step back from it, I think that the World Cup and the international football, as much as it's tedious throughout the autumn when you're playing tough qualifiers, the sharp end of it, the peak of it is up there with anything. It may not be the best standard of football,
but it's the best football.
It's the best football in terms of actually grabbing you, I think.
Yeah, no, I really hit up on that view for sure this summer. So that's all to come on the football show. Pat and Evan will join us as well, but we should start with the main story. And this is our half seven piece. We will have Deirdre Duke and Nikki Daly in studio for you. They were already in. They're pretty busy right now. I think a lot of the team are spreading this evening and heading back home and to try and catch up on ordinary life. The news round is brought to you this evening with Screwfix.ie, championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products. And Richie, it seems as we kind of try and get rid of the last morsels of puke in our mouth over the Shane Ross situation, there is a bit more detail on this 1.5 million, a proportion of which will go to hockey, that we're getting some more detail on.
A bit more detail, Joe, but not much, to be fair to Shane Ross. He's attempted to offer some clarity on his announcement of extra funding for governing bodies ahead of the 2020 Olympics. During the Irish women's homecoming yesterday, the Minister for Tourism and Sport said an extra 1.5 million would be made available ahead of Tokyo. And Minister Ross says that money comes from a 12 million euro dividend from the board of the Irish Aviation Authority paid out earlier this year. Details of how that funding will be allocated are due to be announced in the coming days, said a statement this evening, possibly by Monday. One of the World Cup silver medalists, Deirdre Duke, says they're badly in need of a new pitch at the National Stadium at UCD.
Well, for a start, we need a pitch.
Yeah. Really?
We actually currently don't have an FIH approved pitch to play on.
Okay.
Our National Stadium in UCD, the pitch is pretty much unplayable for an internet. There's so many divots in it. The ball just lifts, you know, on both circles, and
there's different surfaces as well.
Kind of glued it back together, and it hits things, and it's just, which is not ideal.
Not ideal for working on your first touch.
No, absolutely not.
Okay. That's a clip of Deirdre Duke and Nikki Daly. They'll be on the way at half seven, the full interview. And to be honest, I wanted to be fair to them. It's not fair to ambush them with political questions when they're trying to enjoy a World Cup final and a silver medal. So we touch on where they would like the money to go. I didn't necessarily want to get into what did you make of Shane Ross with them, because I don't think it's fair. And
you wouldn't want to ambush them. Leave that to the politicians to ambush these stories.
They're not used to doing media like this. It's not fair. You wouldn't want them worrying about, did I say the wrong thing about our Minister of Sport? But that aside, we're probably a bit freer to talk. There's two issues. One, there is just like the shamelessness of it. Like we're talking like this is like the thick of it kind of territory of just horrendous judgment of a scenario and a situation. And you're exploiting the goodwill towards these players in the most kind of grotesque way and shameless and obvious kind of way. And then two, maybe more importantly, this is too volatile a way to conduct national sports policy. Like, if they hadn't beaten India in the quarterfinal, do they get anything?
But
if they don't get out of the group stages, do they get anything? If they lost the penalty shootout to Spain on Saturday, would they get a proportion of 750 grand instead of 1.5 million?
That's the thing that they even touch upon in this statement. It says, following the World Cup performances of the Irish women's hockey team, the minister has allocated 1.5 million of the 6 million of the ultimately the 12 million that somehow came from the board of the Irish Aviation Authority. That 1.5 million, this is going to go to sport. Like, they knew about this extra money that was just hiding down the back of the couch while they're announcing a 10-year plan for sport just last week.
Mm. Yeah.
It defies explanation as to where, like, all extra money for sport is absolutely welcome.
So just but explain
this nonsense of just, saying that.
But look,
explain that again for one sec.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So, and we did this in the show. So a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I think there was the 10-year plan.
Yeah.
And they talked about allocation of finances over the next 10 years.
Which appeared to be fairly detailed at the time. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. Reasonably detailed. So there was a 12 million dividend from the board of the Irish Aviation Authority paid earlier this year, and of that 12 million.
Six million is going to sport. Six million
is going
to the department and Ross and Griffin, yeah,
okay.
And tourism, obviously.
And 1.5 million
of the six is going to go to sport.
Okay.
Like, but they knew about it. Like, they openly admit that this deal was done earlier in the year,
right,
from the board of the Irish Aviation Authority. So why wasn't that money made available as part of the 10-year plan? Were they waiting for a good news story to come along for them to say, oh, now we'll put forward this extra 1.5 million. It just doesn't offer any. It seems like an opportunistic moment that would have been either saved for the hockey team or a medalist in Berlin this week or a medalist in the swimming in Glasgow, or if Oliver Dingley had gotten a bronze in Edinburgh this afternoon, that suddenly the success story would have granted the opening up of this 1.5 million, which ultimately is a pittance for the different NGBs that are going to get hold of it, but ultimately would have opened up this 1.5 million and allowed Shane Ross's full opportunity.
Are we being any way harsh there?
No. I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the Irish political attitude towards sport, like in terms of policy, it's always reactive, like, rather than progressive. It's always, you know, reacting to what's happening at that particular point. And, like, I think you've sort of touched on it there, like, for sports in Ireland that struggle with, you know, issues of funding and resources, and that's most sports in Ireland, beyond the sort of the obvious mainstream ones, they need to, like, perform a miraculous feat to get themselves into the discussion for their funding to become a talking point.
It's a shop window effect.
Okay, maybe that's a responsibility for everyone too, for media, for everyone. But it's the same. It's like you'll have an Olympian, as you mentioned, or, you know, the European Championships, where someone will need to, like, get into the top 5, 6 in the world in a sport where, like, the odds are stacked against them, to then raise the issue, like, of where they're at and what they should get. And then, I don't know, like, you know, Shane Ross was coming out on Sunday and again extolling this wonderful Irish story of the amateurs competing against the professionals. Like, how often is this the story of Irish sport, that we are always the amateurs with jobs, you know, competing against professionals?
But we're a small country, to be
fair. There's other small countries too that have professionals, or they, you know, it seems like that if you were to, like, craft one Irish sporting story, that would be it.
These stories tend to repeat. Like, one of my Facebook memories from a day or two ago, it was on the same day as the homecoming, so it would have been yesterday, was the Irish men's hockey team's first game in the Olympics in 108 years.
Yeah.
And the story before their appearance over there was that they had to essentially go on their own funding.
To be fair, just to throw in a point, for obvious reasons, we're all going to be a lot more familiar with the Irish stories than other countries. Like, this could be happening to a degree in lots of other countries. Olympic athletes around the world generally are not paid a huge amount of money and are not amazingly well looked after. Yeah, so we are going to be a bit over familiar with our own story.
Absolutely. But
I think that's the point where.
But the opportunism that's being played out here.
That's the part that I find the most.
But that's what the role has always been about. I mean, the way in which sort of sports grants and stuff have been doled out, like that ministry hasn't really been a hugely serious one.
I know, but
in terms of that.
Here's the frustrating part is that
it's encouraged.
This level of opportunism, this volatility in how we're actually going to build a policy, comes 2 weeks after a national sports policy document was published with funding objectives. And I mean, the point was, to hold the minister to account here, there was a sports document published 2 weeks ago, and the plan was they're going to have kind of like a central leadership group of 15 people, I think, in the next few months, and they're going to have 9 months to come up with a plan. So now the minister has just swanned on in here. He's like, geez, I'm live on BBC News. And almost said, well, you know, screw the leadership group, which is all in that document thing we launched a few weeks ago, and screw the plan they're going to come up with. I'm announcing the 1.5 million right now, and people are going to love it. And, like, you know, it's so difficult if you're not used to lights and cameras to actually digest everything that's going on around you. You have this group of people who are not used to the media spotlight, live on TV, and all they hear is 1.5 million.
You can hear the gasps.
It's the gasps. Mm. That is the moment of peak tone deafness, stomach churning, you blank. Like, this is just, like, not the way to do business.
It's moot, but literally conducting an interview with his arms around two of the players yesterday as well on camera was particularly gross.
Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, I don't know. The point on the pitch, by the way, we'll move off it, I guess, because it's a bit unfair if it becomes the big story.
But it is a fair point. I mean, like, facilities in this country for a lot of sports are a problem.
Well, the pitch, that is, we'll move off Ross now, because let's not make him the story for tonight anyway. Mm. For the time being, we'll talk to Deirdre Duke and Nicky Daly coming in. On the pitch situation, the short version is they have no FIH pitch in the country that's approved for play. So one of the issues is that they've jumped from 16th in the world up to 8th.
Yeah.
And one of the real perks of being 8th or higher is that when you're qualifying for the Olympics, i.e. Tokyo, you get to play one of your crucial qualifying matches for the Olympics at home. If you're 16th as they were, you can be anywhere in the world. You can be told, bad luck, you're going over to other side of the world and you have to be there in 2 weeks' time, and that's just the way the cookie crumbles. But they'll get a home game in Ireland. The problem being, they don't have anywhere
to
host
it.
They literally don't have anywhere to host it.
But that's why there has to be a sustained campaign on this as well. Yeah. And I know, it's true, I mean, you can talk about Shane Ross getting involved, but I think, you know, everyone who popped along to Dame Street yesterday or whatever, you know, it can't just be a, well, that was great, and then reverse out of the picture as well, too. Mm. You know, I mean, they are reactive. If there's enough people calling for that, you know, over a sustained period of time for those facilities to be improved, then it will strike a chord eventually as well. So we can also be guilty of just, you know, dropping into it and being very sincere about these issues and then sort of heading out of shot as well.
Sure, we can. But in fairness, it's not the media's primary
role. No, it's true. And that's where, I mean, I think the minister, I'd love if we had a sports minister who wasn't just thrown in with some other
portfolio.
With a portfolio, because it's something that's hugely important to, like, the way, you know, for under many areas, under like health, under, you know, it's a very important thing. And it's, and yet, you know, he's got other things going on that are very important to people as well.
Mm.
But anyway, that's just a personal bugbear.
Yeah, no, I think it's one most people would share. So we'll bring you Deirdre Duke and Nicky Daly and actually just talk about the last couple of weeks in their lives, which have been pretty amazing. And we do touch on the funding situation as well. That's already recorded. That's on the way in about 10 minutes' time or so. You mentioned Thomas Barr at the top of the show, Richie.
Yeah, indeed.
Ongoing here in Berlin.
He's qualified for the final of the men's 400 metres hurdles at the European Athletics Championships in Berlin. He placed second in the semi-final in a time of 49.1 seconds. He came in behind the reigning European champion and Olympic bronze medalist Yasmani Capello of Turkey, born in Cuba, of course. Phil Healy says she can use her 100 metre performance for her preferred 200 metres later on in the week. The Cork athlete placed seventh in her semi-final of the 100, running a time of 11.46 seconds and missing out on a place in the final. Healy, though, will be back on Friday morning in the heats of the 200, and she wasn't too disheartened by this evening's finish.
Absolutely, I'm really happy with the performance out there today. Felt my start was better and then I came through. It was 11:46, I think, so, and there was no wind out there, so it's just as good as the other performance I've had throughout the season with favourable wind, so I'm looking forward to taking from this, going back to the hotel, recovering and coming back out again on Friday.
Yeah, again, you talked about stepping stones last time and you were in the 100 metres of the Europeans, you make it past the first round, you're now into the semi, everything has gone in the right direction, and again, great atmosphere here in the baking heat of Berlin.
Absolutely, like 2014, didn't make the semi, 2016 didn't qualify individually, and then coming back here in 2018, coming out and finishing seventh in my semi and ranked well overall and ranked higher than I came into the championship as well, so I'm very happy with that.
And you've ticked all the boxes, that's good, and we look forward to seeing the 200.
Thank you.
Phil Healy there speaking in the bells of the Olympiastadion to Irish Athletics. Belfast Stephen Scullion is just underway in the men's 10,000 metres. Brendan Boyce, meanwhile, says he was only walking for 3 weeks heading into his 19th place finish in the 50k walk today. He was diagnosed, he says, with a stress fracture in his leg just 9 weeks ago. Elsewhere today, Claire Mooney and Schieffer Clary Butner both failed to advance from their heats in the women's 800 metres, and Sligo athlete Chris O'Donnell finished sixth in his 400 metres heat but posted a seasonal best time in doing so. Oliver Dingley registered his best ever finish in a major championships today. The 2016 Olympian, placed fifth in the final of the men's 1 metre springboard diving at the European Championships in Edinburgh. His fifth of six jumps had placed him within touching distance of a medal, but just 6.5 points ultimately separated him from a bronze. He'll return on Thursday for the preliminary round of the 3 metre springboard. That's an event in which he achieved a top 10 finish, eighth to be exact, in Rio 2 years ago. And Dara Green, he was sixth in a semi-final of the men's 50 metre breaststroke at the European Championships in Glasgow. Glasgow. The Longford man swam a time of 27.44 seconds this evening. He was 12th overall and so missed out on a place in the final.
How long did Arsenal?
Yeah, Alisher Usmanov has confirmed he's selling his shares in the club. Majority shareholder Stan Kroenke is to use a £557 million loan to purchase the Russians' 30% stake at the Premier League club. The move brings to an end a lengthy power struggle at the club, leaving Kroenke as the sole owner. It's expected Usmanov could now pitch up at Everton.
I know we'll touch on this in the football show. I mean, Wenger and most Arsenal fans will love nothing more than the sound of a £557 million loan, a leveraged buyout type thing that the Glazers, you know, enacted at Manchester United and spent years paying off millions in interest every year. They'll think our frugal behaviour over the last 25 years, it's been worth it.
Yeah, we're heading to a better place now. Yeah. No, the news seems to have gone down very well anyway in the Arsenal fraternity.
Has it?
Don't use sarcasm with Joey.
The default position of crisis has already been adopted, you know, before
the
season
starts. It's a black day for the club, Dan. It's a black day.
It's a soap opera.
Okay, we'll touch on it more in the football show. We have movement at Bray.
Yeah, Gary Cronin's the new manager at Bray Wanderers. The former Seagulls midfielder becomes the third permanent, and I use that term loosely, manager at the club this season following Dave Mackey and Martin Russell. The former Longford assistant takes over from caretaker Graeme Kelly, who announced his own departure from the club this afternoon after 4 years at the Carlisle grounds. James Owens is the man who's going to take charge of this year's All-Ireland Hurling Final meeting of Limerick and Galway. It'll be the Wexford official's second All-Ireland decider after he took the whistle for Kilkenny's 2015 victory over Galway. There'll be a Limerick man in the middle for the minor final. Ballylanders official Johnny Murphy will referee the meeting of Galway and Kilkenny. Meanwhile, Chelsea may have found their man to replace the AWOL Thibaut Courtois. Athletic Bilbao keeper Kepa Arrizabalaga is due to travel to London tomorrow to discuss an €80 million move to West London. That would appear to free up Courtois to join Real Madrid, as seems to be his wish, and should the move happen, Kepa would replace Alisson as the world's most expensive goalkeeper just over a week after the Brazilian joined Liverpool.
Courtois move seems fairly nailed on to happen. I mean, he's literally taking pictures on his social media with shop people, officials, having a great time. Not in London anyway. And he's got a couple of kids in Madrid as well, so he wants to be closer to them, which is...
Always a good excuse.
How cynical is that? That is disgraceful. More money near your kids and Real Madrid, going one way.
The old transfer window closing on Thursday is for the Premier League clubs is sort of a fascinating development this year. It really sort of puts the squeeze in them because there's no rush on Madrid. They can get the deal done after the window. Because their window doesn't close until the end of the month. But it's the Premier League clubs that have to put the squeeze on this week. So they're actually, although they are the bullies of Europe in terms of what TV money has given them relative to other teams, the shoe's on the other foot a small bit this week.
Can they still deal with English clubs in any direction transfer-wise after the transfer deadline closes? Can a Spanish club buy?
They could buy Hazard or Courtois. Yeah, they can. Okay. But an English club can't buy.
So an English club can just sell. They can sell after the deadline.
They can sell. Yeah, but if they want to replace Courtois, as Richie said, they need to get someone in this week.
Yeah, yes. Essentially, the day for registering players is 5 o'clock on Thursday.
This seems very unfair on the richest league in the world.
I think it's great.
No, it is unfair though.
It was 14 out of 20 clubs voted for it. I think it was 15 out of 20 voted for it last year. Because they felt that the window was overshadowing the opening weeks of the season. Jeez. But when the other leagues didn't move with them,
unintended consequences.
It's also come off the back of the World Cup.
Yeah,
it's almost like these people in these multi-million-pound clubs don't know what they're doing sometimes.
They'll be having a vote fairly promptly this year again, won't they?
I would have thought so. Yeah, okay. Backfired a bit.
I should mention, by the way, we have a roadshow this week, the All Ireland Football Final on the way, and we've got semi-finals this week. So we're heading to Galway, Roisin Dubh this Thursday. Nathan's going to be there alongside David Brady. We will have some Galway legends, Michael Meehan, Ray Silk, Pat Comer, Raisim McMenamin will be there. Charlie Redmond will be there as well. You have to have one dub, in fairness.
Darling of the Hill, Charlie Redmond, to give his official name.
So they'll look back in the Super 8s and most certainly look ahead to the semi-finals on this weekend. All in association with the new Boyle Sports app. Tickets are free, but they are almost gone. So if you fancy coming along this Thursday, go to offtheball.com/events right now and register, and then make sure obviously you print them off or download them onto your phone ahead of Thursday evening. That's pretty much us done for the time being. That's our news round done. After 8 o'clock, we'll have Dahi and Jamesy talking hurling. We'll have James Horan on the show alongside Dara O'Kaneja before the football show at 9. But up next, we are talking hockey.
Off the ball on News Talk.
Thanks to Screwfix.ie. Championing the trade with a choice of over 20,000 quality trade products.